Member Week is here at Lowe's. That means it's time for MyLowe's Rewards members to save big with up to 40% off hundreds of items like appliances, tools, home essentials, and more. Plus, get free standard shipping. Shop these exclusive member-only savings now through October 15th. Not a rewards member? Join for free today. Free standard shipping not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Thursday, we're going to be at Wakefield Crowbar doing a live remote noon until 2, and then we'll be streaming live on the website from 2 to 3, watching the baseball game. Will House will be there as well. So come out to Wakefield Crowbar on Thursday. Hang out with us. Watch the game with us. Watch the game with the Will House. Also, join Culture Map October 27th for the tailgate. This is not your typical party in a parking lot. The tailgate is a celebration of the culture and lifestyle of sports and the fans who cheer them on. Expect tailgate-inspired tastings from your favorite restaurants, including Street to Kitchen, Dish Society, Sticky's Chicken, and many more. Plus, signature drinks, game day activities, and entertainment. Tickets on sale now and include all food and drinks. Go to culturemaptailgate.com to get your tickets today. Framber Valdez will be starting Game 2. Lance McCullers will more than likely be going Game 3 for the Houston Astros. Dusty yesterday didn't want to reveal this quite yet, so he waited 12 hours and reveals it later. Now, Lance McCullers was on MLB Network yesterday, and he said he threw a live bullpen 2 days ago, which kind of tipped the hand, I felt, of what the Astros were going to do. But Framber starting Game 2. Lance McCullers more than likely will be going in Game 3 for the Houston Astros. I know we've talked about the home-road splits in the past, where Lance McCullers at home has been unbelievable. On the road, still fine, but not as good as he's been at home. Framber's got more even splits home away. You okay with Framber Valdez starting Game 2 at home and Lance McCullers on the road?
Yeah, the biggest thing for me with Framber is just, you know, without saying it was him or it wasn't him, Dusty indicated that a couple of pitchers were dealing with some sort of an illness. And if that is indeed the case, my biggest concern would be just being, you know, getting your strength back, being where you were before you got sick. Because we all know when you get a little bit under the weather, it takes a toll on you in terms of your energy level and your strength. And that's what you don't want. Because as long as he's got his A-game stuff, he deserves to be and should be your number two starter, no matter if it's home or road, in my opinion. And look, the streak, which is easy for people to forget very quickly once it was over, the fact is, the streak that he went on and the year that he put together, he earned and deserves the ability to be in the two slot behind Justin Verlander, who's going to win the Cy Young. So that's where he should be, in my opinion.
He is your second best pitcher this year.
Mm-hmm.
I could maybe sell you on Christian Javier, but you're never starting Christian Javier in Game 2 or Game 3.
Going forward, it's a different conversation.
Javier could be available out of the bullpen today. You get full rest.
True, because of all the rest days.
You get two off days. You get a game. You get an off day tomorrow. You get an off day on Friday. He would be available in Game 4 on full rest, even if he pitched out of the bullpen today. That's why, you know, Verlander has been talked about potentially pitching in a Game 4 as well. Logan Gilbert could potentially go in a Game 4 as well. I know the splits. I'm okay with it. Like, Framber's been your number two all year long. Lance McCullers got back late. Lance McCullers last year was good in Chicago. Lance McCullers has had good outings on the road. I don't think Lance McCullers is, like, not capable of pitching well in a road environment. I don't think that Lance McCullers is going to head to Seattle and just pitch poorly. I think he's capable of pitching well on the road, and I think Framber's capable of pitching well at home. Like, this just makes sense to me that Framber, who has been your second-best starting pitcher for the entire year, is going to be your number two starter in the playoffs.
Yeah, look, I think you can get too cute, right? I think that you can tinker and get too cute with a lineup when you don't need to, and that's the dangerous spot you're in when you have been in a position of luxury the entire season, running away with the division and you know, getting the best record in the American League and basically controlling your own destiny. Sometimes you overthink things, and then you start getting too analytical, and you start saying, hey, I know Framber's been your second-best pitcher all year long, but let's look at who pitches better on the road versus home, and let's look at, you know, some of these. I get matchups and things, but as it goes with starting pitching especially, I understand it more so with the bullpen where you're going to go matchups and success against lefties and righties and things like that. But from the standpoint of looking for your second best starting pitcher all year consistently, you don't get any more consistent than the quality start streak that he put together. That's why you have him as your number two. And to have the luxury of coming back with two guys in two separate ways that may be the third and fourth best pitchers, no matter which order you use them, and be that effective in McCullers and Javier, puts you at a position of strength that I would dare say no other team in baseball has this season.
Rex Ryan on the Twitch said, JV and Fromber carried the team all year. Why fix what's not broken?
Exactly. That's what I was getting at.
And that's the too cute thing is something that bothers me, especially in the playoffs. Like, you can dive into the numbers. Oh, Lance McCullers hasn't pitched well on the road, or at least not as well as he has at home.
He hasn't pitched well on Wednesdays with the rainbow uniform.
But you also, like, you have to, like, are you trying to win a World Series or a Division Series?
Trying to win a World Series.
So you don't know how the rest of the playoffs is going to shape up.
Right.
So, like, you need to, in my opinion, you go with your better, more trustworthy starters earlier in the series as you can. Like, you're not going to pitch them on short rest, anything like that. But Justin Verlander's been your best starter. He goes game one. Why? Because it's the opportunity to get him in the most amount of games. I don't think Fromber would come back for a potential game five. Now, he might. He might pitch on short rest and, like, a relief outing, something like that. But whenever you pitch them earlier in a series, there's a better chance for them to pitch again sooner. And then also, if you advance, having your better pitchers available earlier in those series
as well. And let's also not forget the fact that the one thing that Fromber has done that none of the other three guys we're talking about has done is come out of the bullpen, to where if you need him to get a couple of outs, if you need him to go back to the pen because of the days off, because of how the series plays out, that's the guy that's going to do it. It's not going. You don't want McCullers doing that. You don't want Fromber doing that. And you know what? And then you can adjust on the fly as a shorter series. If you get out of this round and you get to the championship series for the league, and you can look at it and say, hey, based on how each guy did in their start in however the Seattle series plays out, if you want to tweak it a little bit for the next round, then that's something that you can consider. But for this series, in a short series, there's nothing that tells you Fromber shouldn't be your number two starter.
Yeah, Poncho saying don't overthink it. And I think that's what you have to do.
That's exactly right.
I look back to the, remember in 2005 when the Astros gave up, Lidge gave up the home run to Pujols. You lost game five and you had to use Roy Oswalt in the game six in St. Louis. And then you win the game six, but it doesn't shape up your rotation for the next series. And look, I understand that a lot of people were saying, well, you know, one series at a time. And I get that. But if you can shape your pitching staff in the following round just by making a simple decision of throw your number two in game two whenever he's fully ready to go, that gives you, I think, a better chance to have a deep run.
Well, and the thing is, unlike a year ago when you could point a finger and say, ifs, buts, candies, nuts, but if McCullers doesn't get hurt, the rest of the run might have been a different story.
Yep.
That's a whole different conversation than saying, if I'd have started Fromber in the second game of the championship series or the World Series, then maybe we would have been talking about a different scenario. That's the kind of conversation you don't want to have Monday morning quarterback style. You don't want to look back and say, I should have started Fromber where he deserved to start all year long because I got too cute. You can live with the fact that if a guy gets hurt or Fromber goes out there and just doesn't have his best stuff and gets beat, you beat our second best pitcher from the entire season. I'll live with that.
Yeah, and you tip your cap.
Right.
You know, you tip your cap.
Job well done, and you guys beat us.
He's also going up against Luis Castillo. Like, do you think the fact that Luis Castillo is pitching in game two
he's dominant.
Has any influence in the decision for the Astros?
I don't think it has. I think you still have to be you, right? You have to plan your lineup the best way you possibly can.
Yeah.
But I think that, there's two ways of looking at that, but the most important thing is, look, if Fromber pitches the way Fromber is capable of pitching, I believe he has the best chance of trying to match Castillo and keep you in the ballgame. With Lance, we know he's probably only going to go five. He's going to throw a lot of pitches. You know, if he's not getting the calls on the edges, it can get a little dicey, and you got to live with the results. You don't want a live or die situation. You want a guy that can kind of be a horse for you to try and match Castillo. I think Fromber's a better guy for that.
Yeah. To me, whoever's pitching on the other team should not influence your decision.
No.
Like, I'm arrogant with my team. I have confidence in
Lance
my team.
I'll take Lance against Robbie Ray. Yeah. I'll take Javier against Robbie Ray. But, you know, in a situation, I don't know if that I like either of those guys, especially as it relates to Lance. I don't know if I like him going up against Castillo because he lives dangerously a lot. He puts a lot of guys on, too.
To your point, like, I'm just going to line up my best and not care who you're throwing.
That's right.
And it's, hey, I got Verlander, I got Fromber, I got McCullers. I'm hoping that it's Javier in game four. and then come and beat us. Yep. Like, I dare you to come and beat us. And whenever you have that rotation, you have that luxury.
Even like Buck Showalter and then even Dusty to a certain point yesterday. Don't sit there and think that you're holding this whole loaded deck of cards and that you've got all these secrets. I mean, stop tinkering. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. If I got DeGrom and Scherzer, I'm going Scherzer and DeGrom in one and two or however you're going. If I have the pitching that the Astros have, I'm going with the two best at the start. We said all year the horses at the top of the rotation, Verlander and Fromber. Why would you change that now?
Yeah, I wouldn't. Like, but I get Dusty holding it close to the vest. Like, why give him that information when you don't have to give it to him yet?
It's pretty obvious.
It is pretty obvious, but it's not going to hurt your team. Like, I mean, is it kind of silly? Maybe a little bit silly, but what's like, it doesn't hurt anything, and maybe it
would be
slightly
different if you're coming off a wild card series.
See, like, I actually agree with what Showalter was going to do with his top two. Like, I like the idea of Max going game one, and then if you win that game, you don't use DeGrom.
You don't waste them and you have them in a deciding game?
Right. Well, you hope you win game two, and then you have DeGrom for game one of the NLDS.
Or
it's
that.
Like, that's a different scenario than what Dusty was
but
in.
But see, I think you can't look ahead.
See,
I mean,
that's why I asked you the question a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Are you trying to win a series, or are you trying to win a World Series? Because if you're trying to win a World Series,
if you get cute looking
Buck
too
Showalter,
far ahead, you get caught with your pants down like the Mets did, and you go home.
Well,
he did pitch DeGrom.
Yeah, he ended up pitching DeGrom game two anyways.
But I'm just saying, you don't want to be in a situation where you're looking ahead, so you try and save a guy, and then it doesn't work out.
But it's like, I mean, but you also have a game in hand. Like, it's house's money in game two.
Game two, I'm not as worried about.
Right.
But, yeah, but I'm saying if you're getting cute and then it backfires on you, that's another one where, in retrospect, when you look back, you don't want it to be because you got too cute tinkering with shuffling guys around instead of just going, I'm going with my best in each of these games as it lays out with who's available.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. What is the one thing you could see today that would most calm your nerves ahead of Astros Mariners game one of the ALDS? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Saturday and Sunday start times have been released as well just moments ago. 3:07 on Saturday and then 2:07 on Sunday, if necessary, for those games in Seattle. Howard Balzer is going to be joining us at the bottom of the hour. Talk some NFL football with Howard, and there will be Astros the rest of the way. What is one thing that you could see today, Astros Mariners game one, that would calm your nerves the most?
I would say a big crooked number early and the offense just exploding would be the best thing possible for me because it would be on multiple fronts. We talked about rust versus rest and the fact that no matter how much, even Verlander highlighted it yesterday when he was talking to the media about no stone was left unturned in terms of trying to make sure that this team stayed fresh and ready and on their game. But nothing duplicates a playoff baseball game or major league baseball game for these guys. So if they come out and put up a big crooked number early and send a message, it not only does that, but it also sends a message to the Mariners. Nothing's changed from our point of view. We are going to dominate you. We are going to crush you. We are going to do what we do, and we are not even close to being done. That would be great if I'm looking for something that would calm me down a little bit. Because, look, I'm not scared like you, but what I am is I'm the guy that says, when we start from scratch in the playoffs, anything can happen, especially in a short series, and that worries me. If you get a guy that's been a Cy Young Award candidate all year leading the list, but he doesn't have his A game, doesn't matter from the regular season. I want to see them make sure they carry this thing through, so I'd like to get them off to a good start.
Everybody says the Astros own the Mariners this year. I think they won 12 of 19
12 of
games.
19 is right.
That's 12-7.
That's right.
That's not, I mean, I understand that's in baseball, it's a pretty wide margin. 12 wins, 7 wins, that is not a huge gap. It's not a huge gap
between
the
bigger
two.
Thing that should worry you than that is the fact that there's just a comfortable familiarity with each team knowing each other to where they know where Justin's going to pitch, they know his tendencies, they know everything about him, and they've seen him enough to where that they feel like confident going into the box that they're going to give it their best effort, as opposed to a team that's only seen him once going, man, this dude is like Hall of Fame material. What am I going to get today?
Yeah. I mean, they're not going to be all by Verlander, but Verlander's going to know their tendencies too.
Sure.
And their hot and cold zones and what, you know, they what success they have on certain pitches. 713-780-ESPN. What's the one thing that would alleviate some of your concerns in game one between the Astros and the Mariners? Ocho says, the one thing that would calm my nerves is the Astros' willingness to play small ball. I've seen the Astros play more small ball in the last month or so. And I think that's Dusty Baker trying to get his team prepared to play that style of baseball. Over the final, like, 30 games of the season, how much do we see the Astros' activity on the bases go up as opposed to, like, the first 132?
Mm-hmm.
A considerable amount. How often do we see Jeremy Peña bunt out of the two-hole or bunt for base hits? Pretty often. Chaz McCormick did it pretty often. Martin Maldonado in sacrifice situations did it pretty often. I think Dusty Baker's going to use small ball when it's there. I really do. I think that we'll see it a lot more from the Astros postseason versus regular season, and maybe more of any other team in the postseason.
Yeah, I think that, you know, this is a different animal. And so every situation is going to dictate a different mentality. And I think that as much as, again, you're willing to or not willing to do certain things based on where you sit in the standings. And from most of the season, you sat in such a position of luxury that you could say, I'm not playing small ball here. I'm not making my team or my player, because especially if a guy hasn't bunted in a long period of time, I'm not going to make him do something he hasn't done in a while or isn't good at doing. But when it comes to the playoffs and you know every at-bat and every pitch is important, just like how quickly teams change pitchers as opposed to the regular season, the situation, if it arises, the reason why you have the backups and the numbers you do on the roster is, hey, if I got a guy up there and I need to bunt and he can't bunt and it's middle innings to late innings,
yeah,
I got to get a guy that can put the ball in the grass so that I can advance my runners.
Depends on the personnel. I could see Peña bunting in the series. I could see Maldonado, Chaz in the series. Altuve more of bunting for a hit.
Yeah, but he, especially if they're going to shift on him, he's really good about dropping it down the third baseline.
Yeah, he's not going to sacrifice, but
he
might bunt for a
yeah,
hit.
Yeah, you don't want to give up his bat in most scenarios, but you know what? He's a guy that can bunt. It's so weird, but in today's baseball, there are too many guys that can't.
And he'll take advantage of it. I mean, if he sees that it's there, he'll bunt for a base hit. Mm-hmm. I saw Kyle Tucker do it late in the season.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're, you know, maybe Kyle Tucker will lay one down here or there. To me, I think it's kind of what you said. Early runs always kind of alleviate some fear early. I expect this to be a pretty low-scoring series. Seattle's starting pitching is pretty darn good. Logan Gilbert's pretty darn good. Luis Castillo's pretty darn good.
Logan Gilbert ever pitched in the playoffs before?
No.
That's something I'm not going to say I'm relying on.
No.
But I'm interested in.
Sure. I mean, the Astros have a few of those examples, too. Jeremy Peña, what's he look like in the playoffs?
True.
Trey Mancini, he's set on the bench
saying,
in a playoff
game. As opposed
game.
To a guy you see one every nine players
sure.
in the lineup, I want to see a pitcher that's going out there with the current future of his team in his hands,
right.
being able to handle a playoff situation.
That's going
to
be like seeing what his mannerisms are early.
And knowing who's on the other side. Like knowing I'm going against a guy that's going to win the Cy Young, that's 39, that's been there, done that over and over again. And I know people are going to say his playoff record. Mm-hmm. But you know that you got an experienced veteran horse on the other side. You got to be on your A game. That puts even more pressure on a guy that's never been in the playoffs before.
For some people, though, it elevates them.
It can.
So, like, it's not a pass-fail where,
sure.
like, if you're playing in your first ever playoff game, you're going to stink. Sometimes it's the other way around. Now,
some people hyper-focus in those situations,
you know,
and other people let their blood pressure go crazy.
It's a storyline. It's something mm-hmm. to watch. I'm really interested to see what Logan Gilbert looks like early, too. But I expect it to be a low-scoring series. Both defenses are really good. Both pitching staffs are really good. I think the Astros, top to bottom, have a better lineup than Seattle does. But that's why I want the early runs. And that's like a cliche answer, right? Early runs always make you feel better. But especially in this series where you have pitching and defense, you fall behind 2-0 with a team that has Logan Gilbert and Luis Castillo on the mound and then a bullpen to follow. You're going to be anxious very, very early. You're going to have nerves early.
Yeah. On the flip side, and you're the game one today, when you're talking about the Phillies and the Braves, the one thing on the flip side that the home team with the better record doesn't want to see happen is – you have a crooked number put up against you early, and like you said, and it's against your best pitcher. Because
yep.
now you're not only at home down one if you lose, but you're not you're really behind the eight ball because you're down one with your best pitcher down and used, and you've got a team on the other side that has got to feel phenomenal about themselves. Coming out of a big wild card series win, you don't know if that emotion would be tempered down by you know one of the two beasts coming at you. But if you come off that high and you win game one on the road and you do it by starting early and continuing often, that could be devastating for the home team.
Yeah. All of a sudden the crowd's out of it. And then, you know, the visiting team's playing loose. They have nothing to lose. 9-4-5-1, nothing. Nothing will put my nerves at ease. It's playoff baseball. You're never at ease.
I feel that, man.
Playoff baseball's awesome. It is awesome,
but I always feel this way, especially in the 5-game series in the divisional round.
Yeah.
I'm always worried that you can throw away a 100-win season in like one pitch or one at bat.
1998.
Man.
Brendan's over there laughing at us. I don't know why Brendan's over there smirking at us, laughing at us.
I was just laughing at the idea that nothing could comfort you. Nothing.
Five runs. Jose Altuve, lead off homer.
A big crooked number early would make me feel phenomenal.
I don't even think it's necessary. I mean, early would have you feeling good in game. But I think if they score five runs, period, it's going to alleviate some level of concerns. You know, tomorrow, when we're sitting here tomorrow opening the show, if they score five runs, you're going to feel pretty good.
If you told me they'd get five runs tonight, I'd feel pretty good.
But see, here's the thing. I would feel better. But I know Castillo's on the mound for them in game two, and if he gets game two, mission accomplished. They get a win in our building, going back home with a chance to close out the series. That scares the crap out of me.
713-780-ESPN, what is one thing you could see today that would most calm your nerve? 713-780-3776. 4488 says, I'm really surprised Diaz is not starting in left. Are y'all surprised?
I'm not at all.
I thought Mancini was going to get the nod over Diaz. Now, Mancini's DHing, but, you know, if Diaz was playing over Mancini, maybe he's in left. Jordan's the DH. It's kind of that little, you know, round robin that you have going on there. Diaz didn't finish the season that strong, and I feel like they look at Mancini as a player that has a little bit more upside than Diaz. You know, one big swing from a Trey Mancini.
But you're also going from playing checkers in the regular season to playing chess, where there's a whole lot more thought going into every move. And you've got a guy that in multiple scenarios at multiple positions can be your replacement coming off the bench to give you a bat and to give you a glove and to do the things necessary that Mancini can't do. You're not going to put Mancini at short or third or second or, you know, use him in a pinch hitting spot knowing he can stay in the game to pick up right where whoever was in the lineup left off, as opposed to I can use Diaz and then put him in the outfield for a couple innings. I can use Diaz and I can put him at first or second or third or short. I can put him wherever I need to, and he's going to give me a quality bat, and he's going to give me at least a decent glove.
And they weren't going to bench Yuli. Dusty likes Yuli's defense at first base a lot to not have him at first base. That was obvious. That wasn't going to change. Now, I think that's how they're going to deploy Diaz. I think Diaz is going to be a pinch hitter for Chaz McCormick late in a game where you need a quality at bat.
Chaz is in center game one?
Yeah. And then I think Vasquez is going to be the same thing for Maldonado. I think you're going to see Diaz pinch hit for Chaz McCormick, you know, against a righty late in the game if it's close, and then the same thing for Christian Vasquez.
Yeah, I think that some people were pushing to see Jake start in center field, and I'm just like, we're not there yet. Like, there's not a way that I believe that he's overcome all the demons and all the things we were worried about to say he should start. Now, he can come in as a defensive replacement. He can come in and do some things because you believe in him a little bit more based on how he finished the year. But Chaz should be your starting center fielder, and you're right. And then at a certain point in the game, I think there's only a few guys that are off limits in terms of taking them out of the lineup, and that would be Altuve first and foremost, I believe. But I think other than that, and probably Bregman and probably Jordan, Jordan, you're already putting it in a dicey situation by putting him in left field. But you're looking at, other than that, most guys could be moved, and that's where Diaz becomes so valuable.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's get into some NFL for one segment, then we'll be Astros after that. Howard Balzer, NFL Hall of Fame voter, joins us next. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HRMP guest line, being joined by our favorite NFL Hall of Fame voter, Howard Balzer, joins us. Howard, thanks for taking some time. Howard, I'm watching this Arizona game the other day, and we know how it ended. Kyler Murray killing the clock on first down, which I hate that play outside of like 20 seconds. Then he kills it on third and one because he didn't realize he had the first down. And I'm watching Kyler, who I think is a top 10 talent, but is not playing like a top 10 quarterback. The Cardinals, and Kyler Murray, might be the two most frustrating things for me watching from an NFL perspective.
You know, it's interesting because he was having everybody yelling in his helmet, you know, clock it, clock it, clock it. And that's why he did. And so, you know, a lot of debate has been, well, maybe should he have slid a little bit later? Should he have dived to get the first down? But the reality is at that point, with that little time left and no timeouts, as Cliff Kingsbury explained, that even if they had gotten the first down, they might have taken one or two quick shots to the sideline to maybe get a little bit closer, but they weren't going for the end zone at that point. And so they just put it on the kicker, and he didn't come through. The reality is, if the kicker makes a 43-yard field goal, we wouldn't be debating all this. And so, you know, the Cardinals have had a rocky start to the season. There's no doubt. Murray hasn't played at the same level that he has in the past. But, you know, the one aspect of it, he's playing kind of the way he did at the end of last season when they didn't have DeAndre Hopkins. And they haven't had him for the first five games, one more game without him. And they've been banking on that and counting the days until, you know, he comes back. And so the offensive line has been a bit banged up. So they've had a lot of issues that aren't only with Kyler Murray.
Howard, you've been around the game a long time. I've never had as much frustration. And the only thing close to it was a couple years ago when they were overly concerned about wide receivers and defensive backs and pass interference. But these roughing the passer penalties again last night. Luckily, Kansas City wins that game, so it's easier for them to kind of laugh it off and have some fun. But the fact that a defensive lineman going full speed can have the ball in his hands while chasing a quarterback, fall down, still bracing himself with his other arm, and be called for a roughing penalty that can literally change the complexion of a game to me, coming off the Brady 1-2, is just mind-numbingly frustrating.
No, I'm with you 100%, and I bet anything that the official from behind who threw that flag didn't even realize that Chris Jones had the football. And it kind of reminds me, I'm trying to remember how many years ago it was when there was all these fines issued to players and suspensions for late hits and all that, and they started reemphasizing these plays and starting to call penalties. And the officials were instructed, and that's what they've been instructed here. They've been instructed, if you think that it's roughing or something like that, throw the flag. Now, Mike Pereira, we all know him on TV. Yep. When he was the NFL supervisor of officials, he would always say to the officials, call it only if you see it, not if you think it what it was. But that all changed with those rules, with that emphasis, and now it's changed now. And that's why I said, and Chris Jones said it after the game, I said it back then, when you have those plays that the guy's going to throw the flag because the official doesn't want to get called on the carpet afterwards for not calling one when it was. So they throw the flag, and then it's 15 yards, and there's no recourse. That's why I say if you're accepting the fact that some are going to be wrong and can be, like you said, game-changing plays, then they should be reviewed.
No
question. How many times have we seen one where the flag flies, and then they show the replay for a hit on the quarterback's head, and you see that no, he only hit him on the shoulder, but the official didn't have the right angle. So I don't know if they're going to do something about it, but they definitely should, because like you, like everyone, everyone's up in arms over what's going on.
It's Howard Balzer joining us on the HR&P guest line. Howard, one thing that I'm noticing a trend of in the NFL, head coaches are getting very aggressive, analytical. We saw Brandon Staley 4th-and-1 in his own 48, I believe it was, up by 2, go for it. Yesterday we saw Josh McDaniels down by 1, 4.5 to go, tried to go for 2 to take the lead instead of tie the game with an extra point. Are NFL head coaches going too far?
Well, they don't think they are. And obviously, sometimes we think they are when the play doesn't work. But here's the reality, guys. You've noticed that everybody has. I actually wrote a story on the website I'm doing work for in Phoenix, gophnx.com. Over the last 5 years, the amount of times that teams go for it on fourth down, even taking out when you're behind by 2 touchdowns in the fourth quarter and you have to do it, even taking all those out, the number of attempts has doubled. And there's about 20% of them, believe it or not, are from teams' own territory when it's fourth and short. So there's no question there's been more aggressiveness. And here's the other part of it. The numbers say that teams are making it more than 50% of the time. And so when you have that and you feel as a coach that you have the players who can pull it off, you're going to go for it. You're going to take that chance when it's 4th and 1, 4th and 2. And so that's what Josh McDaniels did. He knew that they were going to have to stop Kansas City anyway, whether they were, you know, whether they were down one or tied or up one. And so he went for it, and they missed it by inches. So I don't know that they're going too far. We can question it. We can debate it. But this is the way it's going in the NFL. And a lot of it, guys, is fueled by a lot of these young head coaches and with offensive orientation that are coming into the league and just approach the game differently than back in the day.
Howard, I'm curious at this point in the season, and I still think it's too early to say who's a contender and who's a pretender, but we're going to have the contender-pretender bowl this weekend. Dallas, who even with Cooper Rush seems to keep winning. Jalen Hurts, who I've said on record many times, and I might have to eat crow at some point, I don't believe that he's the starting quarterback for a playoff team in this league. But the Eagles, and I looked at their schedule, other than Minnesota, they really haven't played all that much. But this weekend is a big game in terms of trying to see how real both of these teams can be. Your thoughts on both of them heading into that game?
Yeah, it's a good point. And although I'll say this, they were a playoff team with Jalen Hurts last year when they won 5 of their last 6, I believe it was, and the one loss at the end of the game to the Cowboys, in fact, was when they rested everybody because they had their playoff seeding clinched. And now they've just picked up where they've left off, and they've added A.J. Brown at wide receiver.
But he could be the reason. You could say he was the reason why they played so poorly against Tampa in the playoffs.
Well, you could argue that. I get it. But, you know, it was the first time out of the box. And so, you know, they're playing the Buccaneers, who are, the defending Super Bowl champions. So, yeah, I'm not anointing the guy and saying he's the best ever. But, boy, he brings a lot to the equation, you know, with his improvement in accuracy, with his ability to run. And he's an excellent leader on that team. But we'll see. Obviously, like you said, there's a lot of games to play. And we'll find out about them this week going against a pretty tough defense. They've had 400 or more yards in the first 4 games of the season. The Cardinals held them under that, even with their 14-0 start. And so that'll be the big challenge, because the Cowboys are pretty much where they are because their defense is playing so well. And they can say to Cooper Rush, hey, just don't make the mistakes that lose us the game. Just go out there and manage it well. And he's done that. And they're playing good football. So this will be, a very interesting matchup this coming weekend.
Howard Balzer, our guest. Howard, which Super Bowl team from last year, Cincinnati, L.A., is in the biggest trouble at 2-3?
Well, I think it might be the Rams, and for this reason. Although the Bengals have still issues in their offensive line like they had last year, even with the changes that they made in the offseason. The Rams have been decimated on the offensive line. They've had already three starting centers and 3 starting guards. They only scored 10 points this past week against a good defense, yes, in the Cowboys, but still to score only 10 points. And once again, it shows that the whole thing, we all like to anoint play callers as boy wonders like Sean McVay when it's going well. And then when teams don't do well, everyone's blaming the play caller. Most of the time it comes down to talent. And we're seeing now that Sean McVay can only do so much with that offense with the players he has. And one unnoticed look at them, or one absence, is Van Jefferson. I mean, we know they have Cooper Kupp, but he hasn't been averaging many yards per reception through the first 5 games. Van Jefferson was a guy last year who was their deep threat. He only had 50 catches, but averaged 16 yards per reception. And teams had to account for him. He's not there this year. He's had a knee injury, and he hasn't played a game. I think that's had an impact on their offense, and they're just not the same team that they were. Stafford's been sacked 21 times in five games. So I think they might be in bigger trouble, although in that division, I mean, what the heck? San Francisco's 3-2, and everybody else is 2-3. With the Bengals, I still think they're going to be okay. That it's a good team. They obviously had a good team with Baltimore. They took down to the wire. And they got off to a little slow start last year. So we'll see if they can pick it up as we head towards the halfway point and then down the stretch.
Howard, enjoy the conversation as always, and look forward to catching up again next week.
Look forward to it, guys. Take care.
It's Howard Balzer, NFL Hall of Fame voter, and our favorite NFL Hall of Fame voter. All right, Brendan's not from Houston. He's a Detroit guy. Are we going to adopt him as an Astro fan? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN
92.5. Can I call a friend? Hey, before you do that, call a friend at Apollo Men's Health and see if you can get some help. If you're not winning the day anymore, you're not trying to win the Olympic gold medal, you're trying to find that energy in your life so that from a day-to-day process, you can get your list of things to do done. You can get your job done. You can get the family things that need to be done, whether it's taking the kids to practice or doing some errands for the wife, or maybe you know you're trying to get on a workout program again and you're just trying to find the motivation to stay consistent and get in there, or you need to recover quicker after you do. You can go to the people at Apollo Men's Health and they can get you on a plan that gets you feeling great again. They've done it for me. They've done it for so many others, and they're willing to do it for you too because they care about their patients. Go to ApolloMH.com right now and see all the different services they offer that might be a help to you. You're trying to win the day because your health is your wealth, and you've got to invest in yourself. From the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, if you have problems, they have answers. They can get you solutions and get you feeling fantastic. The best thing about this, too, is that if you're honest with them and tell them what you're trying to accomplish, they can plan out a step-by-step process that's going to show you the results along the way. A full body composition analysis is recommended if you're looking to do anything with workouts because it can chart your progress. Some days you know you're feeling like, I'm not lifting the weight that I was lifting last week. Am I making any progress? When you look at the body comp, you'll find out, well, my muscle mass is up. My body fat is down. I'm feeling better than I actually know what I'm doing with the weights that I'm doing. I'm getting the results. I'm just not seeing them in the weight room week to week. Well, that's where the body comp helps. Recover quicker, HGH peptide therapy. Stuff for your smoothies, got that too. Two locations to better serve you in your downtown Houston. You mentioned my name, free B12 shot, or a free body comp analysis on your first official visit, and then let the process go from there. Tell them where you're going. They're going to get you there, and they're going to get you there fast. They're the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
That is Justin Verlander's Killer Bee theme song. Ace of Spades, Motorhead. Will he be the ace in the postseason to winning a Cy Young? All right, so Brendan is not from Houston. He's from Detroit. Some would say he's not from 8 Mile, but he's from Detroit, from Michigan. Now, can we adopt Brendan as an Astro fan? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Brendan, make your case why we should adopt you as an Astro fan.
It is really hard to express the level of excitement I had. That's what I said. I told you guys coming in, like, I do feel like my team has a postseason game today. You know what I got a Facebook memory of today? The last time the Tigers won a postseason series.
Really?
9 years ago. You want to know the last time the Pistons won a postseason series?
No.
2007. How about the Lions? Before I was born.
Man.
The Red Wings, I don't know the date. It's like 2013, 2014. I have had very few opportunities to get deeply invested in a team that's mattered in a very, very long time. And I have rooted for the Astros since I moved here. It's not my first time rooting for them, but it's been a lot more casual. Like, this is the first time where I've followed a 162-game season start to finish, and for a long time, the games haven't been exciting, and I woke up this morning with the excitement of an Astros playoff game. I did.
Okay. How long you been in Houston now?
3 years.
3 years? You're wearing an Astros hat.
I wear the Astros hat every day.
He wears it a lot. Yeah.
Every day.
Wears it a lot, or maybe every day.
Unless it's date night, and then he has the coiffed.
Yeah.
Well, I still wore the Astros hat here that day, the day you're referring to. I just did it afterwards.
I was trying to generalize, so it sounded like, you know, you were, you know, getting your fill of dates. I didn't want to minimize it.
There's more than one, but they're not too frequent.
Okay. You very much live this season. You're invested in this year. I think you pull for the Astros.
I would tell you, I honestly have been the whole time.
You helped us resurrect Odorizzi until it was time to send him off.
Yeah.
But this is the first time I feel
songs.
Like deeply invested.
Yeah. I feel like you've been deeply invested. I feel like you're an Astro fan. Like, if I were to, like, what your opinion of the Astros or your desire for the Astros, I would say it's equal to fandom.
Yeah. And I didn't know if that's, like, unfair for me to jump on and if I would be accepted or not.
See, I think if you're an orange Kool-Aid, massive Twitter military type Astros fan.
Well, I'm not. I'm not.
No, I'm saying they're the judge and jury in this.
Are they?
In a lot of ways. Like, they like everybody jumping on the bandwagon. They will willingly accept you, and they will embrace you. It's where you jump off, even if it's temporary, that can turn them against you, and then they never want to see you again. So, like, once it's like the mafia. This is like a Godfather moment, Brendan. If you're in, then you're in. But once you're in, you're not getting out unless they decide you're out.
Hasn't Paul proven you can jump off and come back in?
No, Paulie bothers
while
me.
While still flirting with your side chick?
Paulie bothers me because he says it's his side chick. I really feel like he wants the Mariners to win.
You think so?
I do. I feel like there's a deeper love right now for the Mariners with Paulie, I feel, than the Astros. And that's why I think you can't have it both ways. I think you're either in or you're not. And I believe that if you're in, and because your Tigers are nowhere to be found, then you could be in. Just understand, you can't be jumping off and on and off and on.
No, I'm in.
Okay.
I mean, don't get me wrong. When the Tigers are good, I'll be in on them again, too. I think you can have more than one team,
right?
You
don't have to worry about that.
I don't have to give.
I don't think you have to worry about that.
Certainly not anytime soon, it doesn't appear.
Eon Twitch says, no, you can't join the bandwagon.
Oh, wow.
Todd the Show says, let him have it. He's not putting up much of a fight. And King of Twitch says, welcome aboard, Brendan. Most Astros fans are bandwagon anyway. Jump on.
Todd did say if the Astros get shelled, he's petitioning to deport me.
Yeah, back to Michigan.
See?
We're going to deport you back to Michigan.
I think, you know, in 5 to 7 years when the Tigers become relevant, then you while working at the Highway to Hell, can probably figure that out then. But I think that once you're in for the next couple years, I mean, this is like, again, your initiation says that once you're in, but you're not getting out anytime soon once you tiptoe in those waters.
Yeah. Yeah, see, King of Twitch says you can't support two teams. So you got to pick one.
I mean, for now it's easy.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I guess you can make the flip whenever the other team gets good.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Or I mean, I'll just support both.
If AJ starts leading the Starship Enterprise into uncharted lands from years past.
I wouldn't be surprised if he gets out of
the
there.
The difference?
I think you're right.
Between Paul rooting for the Mariners and the Astros is that you have the division. You also have this literal series. Like, it puts them in a difficult spot. I don't anticipate being in any difficult spot with the Astros and Tigers anytime soon.
No, a different division. They're not good. And you know what other thing? Like, you rooted for Matthew Stafford on the Rams. Like, it's kind of the same parallel with Verlander to the Astros. Like, favorite football player,
you know,
Rams, favorite baseball player, Astros.
Bringing that up.
That's a good point.
I wasn't even here yet, and I was invested in the 2017 World Series. Like, typically, I'm not one to watch a World Series if my teams aren't involved. I don't care about baseball on a national level like that. I watched the 2017 World Series, even non-Verlander starts, because I was invested in him winning one.
You didn't have a jersey that would look like it had been peed on from from the Astros then, did you?
No, I don't have any Verlander Astros gear.
It sounds like you might.
Well, maybe that's a prerequisite.
4488 is the Hive spokesman. I didn't know that we had one. We accept Brendan if he buys beers Thursday at Crowbar after an Astros win.
You won't be there.
I will be here running the Astros.
He said after the Astros win. So you can head over there
to the game. I'm going to head to the airport after.
Brendan has said that Jake will take over for him and buy those beers. So there you go.
Jake speaks
as long
for
as
me.
Jake buys in Brendan's name, then Brendan's on board. See, I'll accept Brendan because I believe that as the stakes get higher and the other team's following becomes a little bit more annoying and vulgar, like the Yankees and the Dodgers, like you need every soldier you can get. So that's why him jumping on now before the playoffs have even started this year, I'm fine with that.
Dizzle says, Brendan is one of us now. Let's go! 2 exclamation points.
I really am. There, obviously, you guys know I was excited for the Rams last year in the postseason, but aside from that run, it's been a long time since I've had this level of excitement for anything in sports.
Yeah, I think you're in.
I think from my own personal perspective, you know how invested you are when I feel the way I do, like today. Like, if it was just game one and I was like, whatever, you know, either they're supposed to win, but I'm not. Like, the fact that I'm nervous, the fact that I'm thinking about all the possibilities of where they could, you know, screw up and trying to prevent that from happening, and because I'm almost superstitious in a lot of ways, I'm only that way with, as you guys know, one team. So the fact that I'm that way with the Astros tells me how invested and how long I've been invested in this team, and that's where you get to a different level of fandom. But, yeah, I mean, look, in terms of what I foresee in the future for this team and having to deal with all the Yankees a-holes and stuff, if they face them or other teams down the road, I'll take Brendan on the bandwagon right now.
This Philly Braves game, both starters are out of the game before the fourth. Phillies lead
6-1. That tells you about how we were talking about how quickly playoff baseball can change in an at-bat, a pitch, a moment. But yet the Phillies are doing it, and they're up by 5 runs.
Yeah. 9-4-5-1. We have Cowboy fans that root for Stros. You'll be fine. 2920. Mattress Mac just put $10 million on the Astros to win it all. Man has to stop jinxing us. And Chris from Beaumont, since Brendan works on Houston Sports Talk Radio, he's been here for 3 years. If he wants to jump on the bandwagon, he deserves a free pass. I think it's unanimous. I think Brendan is in.
I actually thought I would get more people on the other side than it sounds like I am. I thought I would get a little bit of pushback because the Astros are so good.
Wait till tomorrow.
And it is so...
yeah, if they lose. If they win, they'll be fine.
Wait till tomorrow. If you jump in and they jump off the bandwagon, they jump off the deep end the wrong way in game one, they're coming at you tomorrow.
It is just so easy to be an Astros fan. And so I thought there would be more push. Right now. I'm not saying always.
Not nationally,
but in the city.
Yeah.
Is game one more important than any other year? The fact that you have Verlander ready to go game one. Like, game ones are always important, but I think it's more important this year, knowing that Luis Castillo awaits in game two.
The table has been set for you to be in the ideal driver's seat position, and the only thing that can screw it up is you, right? If that makes sense. If you're the Astros, you couldn't ask for anything better than Verlander in game one, setting up your entire rotation, knowing you're playing the team that I think you wanted when the playoffs started, when you saw the matchups, and knowing the only thing that can get in the way of it is you. If you screw up and crap the bed and can't score runs, or Verlander somehow, some way blows up and the Mariners get game one and send a message like that, that could throw a monkey wrench in the entire process.
Look, I think you can survive a split in Houston, because I mean, you would think you could get one of two in Seattle with McCullers, Javier, and then you have a game five at home with probably Verlander on the mound.
And you've had your way with Robbie Ray.
Yeah, I think you can survive a split, but if you fall behind 1-0 and then Luis Castillo is ready to go in game two, I feel like there's more emphasis on game one than ever before.
I don't disagree with that because, again, you're looking at the rust factor too and hoping that this team comes out of the gates and sends a message. But if they look like they've been resting a while, and they're not on their A game, and you know that a team that's riding the momentum train, that's coming off the series win and knowing that they got their ace in game two, it's only going to be worse. It's only going to be more cockiness and more confidence from the other side, and that's what you don't want to run into in a short series.
Like, if you win this one, I feel really good. I feel really good after one game. You're up 1-0. Like, even though Luis Castillo's going game two, like, you're kind of playing with house's money there a little bit. I feel good if you're up 1-0. If the Astros lose today and Luis Castillo's ready, they split in Houston, they take home field advantage back, and then they have Luis Castillo ready to go for game two, I'm not going to feel very confident.
No, I would agree with that. I'm gonna be very worried about this team's ability to get out of this series if that's the scenario we're talking about tomorrow. I mean, ideally, they win by a large margin, they set the tone early, and they're basically coasting for the whole first game. Then you should have all the confidence in the world. But the worst-case scenario is you lose this game, you lose in a way in which you look overmatched and out of place at the plate, and your best pitcher doesn't perform well, and you know that Fromber, whether he was one of the guys sick or not, is a guy that you're worried about, that's a problem.
One key today for Verlander.
I just think go deep into the game. Mm-hmm. I think get out of the first and go deep in the game, and you're going to be in a good position.
All right, we're going to be at Wakefield Crowbar on Thursday for game two. Fastball's elevated. All right, Astros Mariners, ESPN national broadcast right now on ESPN 97.5.